The following reading is brought to you by the Illinois Radio Reader. Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, July 10th, 2025. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Traver Reborn to Become an Extraordinary Woman, by Djack Alkier. Normal. Recognized for her work at the YWCA's Labyrinth Outreach Services, helping formerly incarcerated women find their way back to society, Vera Traver is this quarter's extraordinary woman. Lost dreams do awaken, she said Tuesday, getting her nails done before the ceremony. If a person believes in rebirth, I believe they got a chance. Traver has experienced her own transformation from addiction, jail, and homelessness to the woman she is today, she said. Never would I have thought that I would have the freedom that I have today, you know. Never did I think that I would really be delivered, Traver said. She credits her Christian faith for her successful recovery, reconnection with her children, and finding herself in the position she is today, Traver said. Her cousin shared some encouraging words after hearing of Traver's recognition, Traver said. She was like, "You are that root that grew through concrete," Traver said. Traver, however, found it difficult to express the emotional weight of her recognition on Tuesday night, choosing, rather, to show it. The words are in my tears, you know, and I know that God understands them, but they are definitely not in English, she said. Transformation. Born in Los Angeles, Traver was raised in Bloomington by her grandmother, Annie. When Traver was 12, her grandmother was hospitalized, and Traver was put into foster care, where she was a victim of abuse. She dropped out of high school at age 16 and fell into a cycle of substance abuse for years. During that time, Traver gave birth to 5 children and spent time without a home, she said. She experienced extreme lows in her outlook on life, nearly losing the will to live, she said. I'm either going to kill myself or I'm going to provoke somebody else to do it because I couldn't take it anymore, Traver said. In 2006, while pregnant with her 6th child, she was receiving treatment for addiction when things turned around, Traver said. The Extraordinary Women Project shared that, at that time, Traver was watching another woman push her child on a swing set and felt a moment of clarity. It was like CPR breathing life back into me. The wind spoke to me, saying, "You are a mom too. You're going to raise this child, and one day you'll be in a room with all 6 of your kids," Traver said. From there, she joined 12-step programs and support groups in her faith community. Traver received her GED in 2009. She has worked at Labyrinth since 2015. In 2018, Traver was able to sit at a table and share a meal with all 6 of her children at Famous Dave's. She maintains contact with all of them. From that previous mindset to where I'm at today, I'm still pinching myself. Like, is this real? This is my life for real, Traver said. I cannot really put in words the darkness that I walked through. And to where I am today, it just does not happen for many people. Fire in my bones. Traver's experiences through recovery to supporting women readjusting to society is emblematic of the Extraordinary Women Project, said board member Rebecca Lynn. I can say that because her journey has been nothing but relentlessness and resiliency, she said. The two met while they were both working at Chestnut Health Systems, Lynn said. Traver faced a multitude of barriers in her road to recovery and reclaiming her family, Lynn said. She was already sober at the time that I met her, and just to be liberated, to be able to share her story, the systematic issues, yes, to overcome them, amazing. To get all of her children back, unheard of. So what she's done is just, like, top-notch. Several of her children were on hand as Traver accepted her award Tuesday in the Wesley Becker Conference Room at the Center for Health at Fort Jesse in Normal. I'm really proud of her. She's really come a long way. She's broken a lot of generational curses within our family tree, said Tashika Hetherington, one of Traver's adult daughters. I've seen her give her last to complete strangers, Hetherington said. She does anything she can to help people. She really loves the community and believes in what she's doing. Traver's commitment to reclaiming her family holds several life lessons for Hetherington, she said, herself a mother. Always be there for my son, she said, and to be patient and to just not give up, basically, even if things get tough and hard, to just not give up. Looking back at her life and what this recognition means going forward has made Traver rather enthusiastic. It's like fire shot up in my bones, she said Tuesday. I just want to shout. I want to dance. I want to sing. I want to praise God. I want to give him all the glory. The next local story is entitled, Woman Nets 5 Years for Robbery, by Caitlin Klepek. Bloomington. A Bloomington woman has been sentenced to 5 years in prison for an aggravated robbery she reported to police in November 2023. Brittany A. Wells, 30, pleaded guilty Tuesday to one count of the felony one offense. Judge William Yoder sentenced her to 5 years in the Department of Corrections with credit for 419 days already served, to be followed by 1 year of mandatory supervised release. Initially, Wells was charged with one count each of armed robbery with a firearm, robbery and aggravated robbery, as well as two counts of aggravated battery causing great bodily harm. As a part of the plea agreement, Assistant State's Attorney Emily Young dismissed Wells's remaining four charges on behalf of the prosecution. These charges stemmed from an incident reported November 18, 2023, though Wells and her two co-defendants were not charged until May 2024. Scott P. James, 31, of Bloomington, and Andrew J. McConaughey, 29, of Hudson, were charged with the same offenses as Wells, plus one count of mob action. According to the probable cause statement and factual basis for the case, Wells called Bloomington police to her apartment, saying she saw two men enter and beat her friend with a firearm in attempts to rob the friend. Bloomington police later learned through cell phone data and subsequent interviews that Wells had orchestrated the robbery. Officers noted McConaughey was found in possession of the gun used to batter the victim, and he told police James had given him the weapon. James pleaded guilty in late April to armed robbery and was sentenced to 24 years in the Department of Corrections. McConaughey pleaded guilty to armed robbery in this case and unlawful delivery of methamphetamine and unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon in a separate case. He was sentenced in June to 43 years in prison for all three offenses. First Assistant Public Defender Matthew Coders represented Wells during her Tuesday morning plea hearing. He was unable to be reached for comment after the sentence was issued. And here's a local story entitled Pontiac X Kmart to Change Hands by Drew Zimmerman. Pontiac. A vacant property in Pontiac's Vermilion Plaza, which previously housed a Kmart location, is set to have a new owner and occupant after more than a decade. During Monday's City Council meeting, Pontiac City Administrator Jim Wolford said Blink Marketing, a logo and merchandising agency, is seeking to occupy the building for inventory and distribution purposes. The building's current owner, Monomy Real Estate out of Chicago, has applied for a building permit for roofing work at the plaza, which Building and Zoning Director Greg Knowles said was part of the terms of sale for the Kmart property. The Kmart store closed in 2012. Knowles said he walked through the property about a year ago and found it was structurally sound. Therefore, any remodeling changes will be focused on making the space work for Blink Marketing's intended purposes, as opposed to bringing the site up to code. Knowles added he has had conversations about proper zoning for the site if there is going to be a retail aspect to Blink Marketing's occupancy. Other shops at Vermilion Plaza will remain operational through this change, Wolford said. Knowles said he is unsure at this time when the new business will open its doors. And here's a local story entitled Mosquito Pool in McLean County Tests Positive for West Nile by Olivia Jacobs. Bloomington. The Environmental Health Division at the McLean County Health Department has reported the first mosquito pool in the county to test positive for West Nile virus this year. The positive test was confirmed Monday in the 61705 zip code area, according to a news release. On Tuesday, MCHD staff began distributing doorknob hangers about the virus and preventative measures in the neighborhood where the sample was located. The common house mosquito is the primary carrier of West Nile, a disease that can cause encephalitis or inflammation of the brain. There is usually an increase of the virus from midsummer to fall when mosquitoes feed on infected birds and then pass on the infection while feeding on humans, the news release said. Most cases of West Nile cause mild symptoms, such as slight fever or headache, but severe infections can cause high fever, disorientation, paralysis, or death. Those at high risk for serious illness include young children, adults 50 and older, or those who are immunocompromised. We regularly trap and test mosquito pools in different areas across the county to track the presence of the virus in McLean County. When disease-carrying mosquitoes become more active, the risk of human exposure and infection also increases, stated Kathy Stone, MCHD Senior Environmental Health Practitioner. There is no vaccine for West Nile virus, so we recommend taking measures to minimize your chances of being bitten by mosquitoes. Those concerned about their symptoms are encouraged to see a medical professional and inform them of any recent mosquito bites, as there are medications that can control the symptoms, the release said. There were 69 confirmed human cases of the virus across Illinois in 2024, and 13 human deaths, which is the highest number since 17 deaths were recorded in 2018, according to Illinois Department of Public Health data. MCHD recommends following the three R's to avoid West Nile. Repel mosquitoes by using insect repellent that includes DEET, oil of lemon, eucalyptus, or picaridin, and wearing clothing that covers the skin at dusk and dawn when mosquitoes are most active. Reduce the mosquito population by removing areas of standing water and report locations where you see water sitting stagnant for more than a week, like in roadside ditches, flooded yards, or similar. For more information, visit mcleancountyil.gov/1740/west-nile-virus or call MCHD's Environment Health Division at 309-888-5482. Here is a State of Illinois story headlined, Illinois to See SNAP Changes, by Ben Zielinski, Capital News, Illinois. Hundreds of thousands of Illinoisans could lose benefits from a federal food assistance program while the state will be required to cover more costs under changes passed in the latest domestic policy plan. President Donald Trump signed the One Big Beautiful Bill Act into law on July 4th, making sweeping changes to social services programs, including Medicaid. Among the programs being revamped is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, better known as SNAP. The bill institutes new work requirements for many people to remain eligible for benefits and shifts some costs for the program to the states. Food stamps were first established in the 1930s during the Great Depression. Renamed SNAP in 2008, the program provides monthly stipends for low-income Americans to purchase select foods at grocery stores. While states implement the program and pay a portion of administrative expenses, the federal government has historically covered the cost of the benefits. Under the law, work requirements to qualify for SNAP benefits have been expanded to include people up to age 64, along with homeless people, veterans, and young adults leaving foster care. Previously, only people age 18 to 54 had to meet work requirements. Those populations didn't previously have to prove they were doing a certain amount of work, but when the changes kick in, they will have to do 80 hours of paid, unpaid, or volunteer work each month to qualify for benefits, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The law continues to provide exemptions for people who are physically unable to work, such as for pregnancy. The changes could leave 360,000 people in Illinois at risk of losing eligibility, according to the state. Trump and Republicans would rather children grow hungry so their friends can receive tax cuts, Governor J.B. Pritzker said in a statement. Here in Illinois, we have been working to combat food insecurity for years, and while no state can backfill these costs, the state of Illinois will continue to fight against these harmful impacts and stand up for working families. About 1.9 million people were using SNAP in Illinois as of March 2025, according to the USDA. New costs for the state. Illinois and most other states will have to cover a greater portion of costs for SNAP under the law, including benefits based on the state's error rate of over and under payments on benefits. Beginning in federal fiscal year 2028, which begins in October 2027, the law requires states with an error rate greater than 10% as of at least fiscal year 25 to cover 15% of the cost of benefits. States with lower error rates would cover a smaller portion of the benefits. Illinois recorded an 11% error rate in fiscal year 24, according to the USDA. More than 1.8 million Illinoisans received $4.7 billion of SNAP benefits in fiscal year 25, according to the state. If Illinois must pay 15% of the cost of benefits, it could leave the state on the hook for $705 million, or about 1.3% of the current year budget. Also, beginning in federal fiscal year 2027, which begins in October 2026, states will have to cover 75% of administrative costs for SNAP rather than 50%. This year's state budget appropriates $60 million for administrative costs for SNAP, up $20 million from last year. And here's a local story entitled "Vogel to Speak at Library" by Olivia Jacobs. Bloomington. The Bloomington Public Library, 205 East Olive Street, will host author Steve Vogel at 7 p.m. Tuesday, August 5th, in Community Rooms 1 to 3. Vogel will give a presentation on his books, Reasonable Doubt, A Shocking Story of Lust and Murder in the American Heartland, which is a New York Times bestseller. The book is about the murders of Susan Hendricks, 30, and her three children, Rebecca, 9, Grace, 7, and Benjamin, 5, at their Bloomington home in 1983. The father, David Hendricks, was traveling on business when his family members' bodies were discovered. He was convicted of the crime in 1984, but the conviction was overturned in a 1991 retrial. The author event is being hosted by the library's True Crime Book Club and the History Reads Book Club in partnership with the McLean County Museum of History. Reading the book beforehand is encouraged but not required. Print copies are available to reserve at the library by contacting reference@bloomingtonlibrary.org or 309-590-6168 or online via Hoopla or Libby. The True Crime Book Club meets quarterly and is open to fans of true crime. Visit bit.ly/BPLbookclubs for more information. And here's a story entitled "Resident Displaced, Firefighter Injured in Bloomington Duplex Fire Tuesday" by Matus Janik. Bloomington. The Bloomington Fire Department responded to a structure fire Tuesday at a duplex on Yukon Circle, where flames had spread into the shared attic and threatened both residences. According to a news release, the fire was reported just before 7 p.m., and crews arrived within minutes to find an active fire at the rear of the building. Firefighters launched an aggressive interior attack and searched both units to ensure everyone was safe. As the fire extended into the attic, additional crews deployed hose lines and worked to ventilate the roof to improve interior conditions, the release said. Firefighters also covered furniture and personal belongings to help reduce property damage. In total, 30 firefighters responded to the call, and one firefighter sustained a minor injury but did not require hospital transport. No civilian injuries were reported. The fire was caused by improper disposal of smoking materials, and the scene was cleared by 9 p.m., the news release said. The American Red Cross was notified to assist one displaced resident. Off-duty firefighters were called into staff reserve units so there would still be emergency coverage during the incident. The Bloomington Police Department, Nicor Gas, and Corn Belt Energy also responded to the scene. And here's an item entitled, Intersection Honors Morris. More than three dozen friends and family members of the late Charles E. Morris gathered on Wednesday, July 9th, at the intersection of Illinois Street and Erickson Avenue in Bloomington, was named the Honorary Dr. Charles Morris Street. Morris was a longtime resident of Bloomington and mathematics professor at Illinois State University. He helped charter the Nu Psi Lambda alumni chapter of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity, Incorporated, and was a lifelong advocate for social justice and civil rights. Morris was a mentor to innumerable students and regarded as a pillar of the African-American community. And here's an item entitled, U.S. Flag Flies High Again in Goodfield. Goodfield. An American flag flies again from an 80-foot flagpole in Goodfield as what community leaders called a symbol of hometown pride. Whether you're patriotic or not, this flag is a symbol of what our community is capable of and what happens when neighbors come together with a shared goal. In Goodfield, anything is possible, said Abby Reel, owner of the Barn 3 Dinner Theater. The pole had stood empty since 2020, but in the days leading up to Independence Day, a group of local business owners and residents joined forces to fund and install a new 20-by-38-foot flag. The tallest flagpole in Goodfield was originally erected at Legacy Built Homes in 2006. It became a notable feature in the community until the flag was damaged and the pole rendered inoperable in 2020. Organizers thanked Goodfield resident Brian Reek of Zeller Electric for his technical expertise. Local businesses and individuals who donated to the project included Vermeer, Zeller Electric, Quirum Chiropractic, Alan Zimmerman, JC Screen Printing, Kurt Feick, Stewart Brothers, New Horizon Concrete, Bryce Knapp, and the Goodfield Legacy Business Park Association. The Barn 3 Dinner Theater provided all supporting businesses with beer cheese to celebrate the flag's return. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for July 10th. Please stay tuned.